From JetBooks, this is Irish Business Builders, a show about great Irish businesses and the people who built them. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping.
You know, I think it's important for lots of companies and for us really, where possible, we use recyclable materials in our packaging. And we've partnered obviously with DPD, who do our deliveries, who are carbon neutral. So, you know, all these sort of things are really important.
I'm Connor Carney, and that's the voice of James McElroy, co-founder of multiple businesses in the pet care technology space, and along with his brother Timothy, finalist for EY's Entrepreneur of the Year program in 2019. James's most recent venture is the newly launched Oscar's Farm, which delivers fresh-pressed dog food direct to your door via monthly subscription. James is also co-founder of GoodDog, Europe's largest peer-to-peer marketplace for dog owners in need of local vetted dog sitters and walkers. GoodDog operates in over 75 cities and has 30,000 sitters and walkers earning a living on the platform. James kicked off our chat by telling me all about the business of Oscar's Farm.
Oscar's Farm is a fresh-pressed dog food company. I think what's unique about it is we built this kind of custom algorithm that creates a personalized meal plan that's based on your dog's specific dietary needs. So when you go on to the Oscar's Farm website and sign up, we ask you a couple of questions around, you know, your dog's breed, the age, the weight. And then from that, we're able to build a custom meal plan that, you know, has the right amount of calories per day and the right nutritional balances. And then we deliver it direct to your door in a monthly subscription.
And what does fresh press mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at the kind of pet food space, there's lots of different types. I think we've found this new innovative way of making pet food. It's called fresh pressed. And really what it is, you know, we use whole ingredients that you then gently cook. And this means that we don't ever have to add in artificial things or bulkers or fillers into our recipes. Obviously, all the meat and the proteins and the vegetables and all that we use, it's all human grade. So we don't ever use anything other than human grade ingredients. And I think then a huge part of, you know, Oscar's Farm is, you know, having the sustainability element in mind. You know, I think it's important for lots of companies and for us really, we see, you know, where possible, we use recyclable materials in our packaging. And we've partnered obviously with DPD, who do our deliveries, who are carbon neutral. So, you know, all these sort of things are really important to us as a brand and as a pet food. And, you know, that's really what the kind of whole fresh pressed comes from. It's really about the quality of the ingredients and how it's cooked.
This isn't really a space I'm that familiar with. Even as a customer, I've never had a pet or anything like that. I know that people are very into their pets. They will spend a lot of money on their pets to make sure that their pets are getting the best food and the best care and the best of everything. How have you kind of come across this particular niche within pet food and within pet care?
Yeah, I think, you know, from going into the pet food, I think there's two areas that I like. I really like, obviously, the pet food space and why we're different, and then also the kind of type of business model we use. But I think from the pet food standpoint, I think, you know, it's kind of no secret that most dog food that you find at the shelf is questionable ingredients, probably is the best way to put it. And many that you know would struggle to pronounce. And we obviously had these issues with our own family dogs growing up. You know, even from my previous company, which we'll go into, GoodDog, all the team there having their own dogs, finding, you know, reliable pet care was always the big issue. But then, you know, the second biggest question you get asked in that business is, you know, can you point us in the right direction of a good quality dog food? And I suppose for us, we never really had a good answer. We never really found, you know, a brand that we could get behind. And really, we decided to create a food for ourselves, for the team's dogs that, you know, we would feed. From that, since launching, we decided to obviously put it out there. We felt we have a really great product and it's different to what's on the market. And the feedback we've been getting has been really great. And, you know, lots of the dogs that are eating it now are really thriving off it. So in terms of the actual business model, I suppose how we're different to a traditional pet food business is, you know, this new direct-to-consumer model, I really like it. It's quite different than us shipping into retail. It means that we can obviously launch quite quickly. And, you know, someone comes on to Oscar's Farm and they fill out the information and then we can obviously ship them their food, you know, the next day. Really, for us, what we like about D2C is, you know, you really own that relationship with the customer in the sense that you can speak to them directly, you can get feedback from them directly. Whereas if we were, for example, to go into Tesco to sell our dog food, we can't really speak to that customer. Whereas what we really like about the D2C model is, you know, we can have that relationship with them. We can ask them how they're getting on, and we can send them offers if we need to. We can learn a lot about them in terms of how many times they come back to us and, you know, what they like about the business and more importantly, what they don't like about the business and how we can improve. So I think this D2C model that we're seeing popping up in a lot of sectors in the e-commerce space is becoming really popular for a couple of those reasons.
Yeah, and just to bring it back to this D2C, so direct consumer model, this has become, as you said, very popular, more so recently. Why do you think that is? Is it because the technology has advanced so much, or is it for the reasons that you're talking about, is that if you're selling direct consumers through your own website, you're finding out more about them and you can learn how to serve them a little bit better because of that?
I think there's a couple of reasons why direct to consumer has become so popular. If you look at the e-commerce space, the barriers to entry to set up an e-commerce business now are so low. As in, you know, you can go onto Shopify and start a business almost in, you know, a couple of days or even hours in some cases. And so the barriers to entry are so low now that you know, lots of people, you know, are having a take on a brand idea, and they're able to launch that business very quickly. I also think though there's a couple of moving parts over the last couple of years, and accelerated by COVID, we're seeing a huge shift just to online in almost every sector. You know, lots of the high street stores now are trying to get a huge presence online. And then I think it ultimately comes down to, you know, the infrastructure for logistics is there now. So in terms of, for example, I mentioned there, DPD, you know, it still amazes me that someone can order on our website before, you know, 1 o'clock in the day. And if they order before 1 o'clock, that they'll have that delivery the next day, no matter where they are in Ireland. I mean, you know, the logistics side of it has just gotten so good. It's enabling these businesses to quickly set up a Shopify site, and, you know, if they have a product, be able to then sell it very quickly and, you know, have a logistics partner that can, you know, almost get their product to their customer, you know, in days, which is, you know, super impressive. And also, you know, opens up the field for, you know, a huge amount of customers to go, well, maybe I won't go direct to retail. Maybe I will just ship directly to my customer.
So e-commerce would have, I suppose, some supply chain things to think about, some operational things to think about that would be very different to your first business. Talk to me a little bit about how's my dog, how that came about, what the business model was, and we'll catch up and see how the two businesses are kind of helping each other out.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny. They're both in the pet space, but they're quite very different businesses in terms of the business models. Just My Dog, which obviously went through a merger, now Good Dog, that was a marketplace. So growing up, it was always a big pain point when you traveled as to, you know, if you had family dogs, as to, you know, finding a sitter, finding reliable pet care for that dog. We found that there was been a bit of a shift over the last kind of 5-6 years in the pet space. This idea of people don't want caged environments anymore. They want one-on-one care and not asking their local vet, can they recommend someone? They want to be able to go on and search and find a bedded sitter in their area. And I think that's really where House My Dog came from. We kind of had seen other marketplaces like the likes of Airbnb and Uber, really liked those business models. I really liked kind of the community aspect of them, but also really liked this idea of the sharing economy, how, for example, anyone can sign up as a sitter on Good Dog. And, you know, once you pass the mandatory vetting, you can go on and start making money, you know, doing something that you love, like looking after a dog. And I think you saw the same with kind of Airbnb people or hosts. You know, maybe they never wanted to rent out a room, but all of a sudden had an experienced Airbnb and they go, oh, well, I'll just share my room and make money doing it. And you get to meet new people and lots of people on Uber, you know, possibly were never going to be taxi drivers, but then, you know, the likes of Uber comes along and you go, oh, this is a great way to earn a bit of extra money. And I really liked that business model of the sharing economy. And in terms of House My Dog, how it works, it's not an e-commerce platform, obviously, but you go on and you search for a sitter in your area and you go on and then you could book that sitter. We provide insurance, we provide 24/7 support. And so obviously, you know, as a dog owner, it's a huge problem when you travel, you know, what are you going to do with your dog? So it's quite different in that sense, but the marketplace side of it is an area that, you know, we really like. And some of the top sitters now are earning a really great living on the platform, looking after dogs.
historically, or I suppose traditionally, marketplaces are an exceptionally difficult business to get up and running. You know, they're great when they're at scale, such as, you know, I suppose with How Is My Dog or Good Dog as it is now, or, you know, with Uber or Lyft or Airbnb or these things that we've talked about before. They take a lot of money to get up and running. They take an awful lot of manpower because you've got two customers, you know, on either side. You're kind of, as you talked about there, you've got your sitter who wants to make money from the platform, and then you have their end customer who wants to have someone look after their dog while they're away. I suppose my first question on that is, how did you actually get this up and running, and what were the kind of steps you took to get it from idea to fully fledged business?
I wish I'd spoke to someone about this before we launched. You're right. You know, marketplaces are just fundamentally tricky. The reason is because marketplaces are two-sided. So you, on one side, you have the supply side and the demand side. So, you know, for us, it was a case of the chicken or the egg. What do we find first? Do we go out to dog owners first, or do we try and acquire dog sitters first? We felt that it was probably made the most sense to go out and start speaking to local pet sitters. A lot of these people run their businesses, and it's very fragmented. They were running them on classified sites like Gumtree or their local community boards. And really what we did is we went to them and said, look, we've built this platform which allows you to showcase your pet sitting business. And once we kind of got a cohort of sitters in kind of any given location, we then kind of flick the switch and we start bringing the business. And once you start bringing liquidity into the market, and these sitters are going, oh, you know, this is great. I can manage all this in one area, and one app. And, you know, they're actually driving lots of business to my profile. Once you start bringing the liquidity into the market, it almost kind of reaches then a tipping point, and kind of organic referral kicks in and the sitters start talking about it. So in terms of kind of the business, we really started to scale that sitter side first and ask the sitters, look, what do you want out of this? And what tools would you like to see in the platform? And once we kind of had a small base, we then almost flicked the switch and started driving dog owners to those sitters and getting the business. I think there's a direct correlation between when a sitter signed up to Good Dog, if they didn't get a booking kind of in the first 60 days, they'd almost certainly churn off the platform. And, you know, we've done a lot of work on, you know, when someone signs up, making sure they get their first booking. And many of the sitters on the platform are earning, you know, great money off the site. But I think there was a story early on when there was one of our first sitters. I think she was based in Slorgan. And I remember after about 12 months of the platform, she had earned over like €35,000 from minding dogs. But she got an early, she had an amazing profile. And you all of a sudden, you start hearing stories from people that, you know, they had kind of been doing this kind of semi-part-time, and then they'd gone into it full-time because Good Dog had kind of allowed that. They got great reviews. They were super active on their profiles. And, you know, it had kind of allowed them then to be able to, you know, capture all the this value and make a full pet sitting business or a dog walking business.
Tell me just a little bit about your background first. Where were you when this How Is My Dog idea came about, and what were your steps to kind of change what you were doing at that time to going into that business?
I was in university, and my brother, we'd always kind of wanted to go into business together, and he contacted me and we had a couple of ideas, but we really liked this marketplaces. We really liked the kind of sharing economy, and we really identified with this pain point of, you know, well, you know, we'd kind of liked the pet space, and then we'd come across being like, oh, well, it's a bit of a pain actually finding a dog sitter. You know, I remember growing up, I was a part of the family holiday. Before we'd go to the airport, we would have to go like 35 minutes out of the way and drop off our family dogs to a sitter there. And it was this elderly woman who was lovely, but she probably had about 40 dogs in her garden. And I remember then, you know, then we'd go back to the airport, and just a lot of hassle. I remember, you know, at the time not really thinking much about it, but looking back going, how easy something like Good Dog would have been then. I mean, it's a bit different to Airbnb. It's a very hyper local business. People typically on Airbnb, they stay somewhere that's not their location or not where they live. On Good Dog, you find that people typically want a dog sitter, you know, within 5 or 6 kilometers of where they live. So, you know, we have to have a huge amount of supply there. And obviously, you know, we have to have that bedding there. So it's a very hyper-local business. We find that because the sitters are local and in their area, people are more inclined to book them and lots of things like this. So I think really where it started was from you know, the pain point of kind of having this problem growing up and struggling to find a sitter. And myself and my brother, we just decided to start building it. We met another technical founder, Igor, and we started to build a website. We went out, and for us doing the market research, it was very easy because our target customer was typically the one that was like had a dog or was walking a dog. So we used to go up to like Cliny Hill and lots of places like that and speak to dog owners and just kind of really refined the idea and discussed them the pain points they had when they travel and really started to build out a business. I think when we first launched, I thought that it would be like, you know, an Irish business and only ever kind of be in Dublin. And then I suppose it really just started to kind of grow legs. And that's how we really started to expand then. But really it was from a place of, we identified with this problem. We liked this idea of the sharing economy. I was going to be doing a master's over in the UK. I kind of put that off then and said, okay, look, we'll do this for a year or two and see where we go. And I can always go back and do the master's. And yeah, it kind of just went from there.
You mentioned there that you had always kind of thought about going into business together, yourself and your brother. But did you always know that you wanted to start a business, and especially this type of business, because loads of people start businesses, you know, every day and every year. But I suppose there's a rare few that start something that hasn't existed really at all before. You know, you're kind of taking the marketplace model and bringing it to pet care. And I suppose maybe you saw it in other countries or whatever else. But, you know, was there something, do you think, innate in you as you were growing up where you thought, you know, I'm always going to start a business and potentially I'm always going to, you know, want to try something a little bit new that hasn't been seen before?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like the marketplace, there was definitely one or two people in the States that were doing something similar. And we kind of had said, well, our business was slightly different. We'd said, okay, that's kind of cool, you know, and, you know, maybe pet care in Europe needs this. But I think in terms of, you know, the starting the business, growing up, I always felt that that's kind of where I'd land. I didn't really know it at the time, but I always felt like maybe a bit stubborn, wanted to kind of, I suppose, paddle my own canoe in that sense and be able to work for myself. And, you know, I really enjoy kind of building things or kind of solving problems. And I think my brother is quite the same in that sense. In school and university, or whatever, I never really thought that I'd end up, you know, setting up a marketplace or going into the tech space. But I always kind of enjoyed building things and used to build websites, very bad websites for kind of small Irish businesses, and always kind of got involved in, you know, the tuck shop in school and things like this. So always kind of liked the aspect. I also think as well, you know, my parents played a kind of a huge part in that. And obviously my dad is also a businessman. And I think just having their support, I suppose, and kind of being like, oh, you know, whatever you do, always having their backing there. I was never expected to go in and, you know, have a kind of office job or 9 to 5, or a question when you run your own business, you're probably in the office longer, but never really expected to go into kind of any sort of particular career. My parents were always very supportive of myself and my brother, whatever we did. I think that definitely helped. And, you know, then following obviously my dad's footsteps in terms of setting up our own business, I suppose, maybe inspiration drawn from there.
As you're talking about the early days of How's My Dog, and you're talking about the market opportunity and that you resonated with the problem and everything, you're very relaxed about it. And I suppose I know just from talking to more business owners like you is that those times are far from relaxing. And it may be in hindsight, you look back and, you know, things resemble now more a linear narrative and you can understand why you did things at the time. Did you find that period difficult? Or did you find it as easy as it's coming across now?
It's certainly not easy. And looking back now, I kind of question going, God, you know, there was times there where it was hard. And I think when I was 24 setting up Good Dog, so about 6 years ago. And, you know, when you're 24, I think you can't probably believe that you know everything. And I think that setting up a business, you quickly learn that you don't. And I think the biggest challenge that I found was there's no kind of playbook. There's no kind of, you do this, then you do this. It's kind of, a lot of it's kind of trial and error. You always try and make data-informed decisions in the business, and a lot of it just comes down to problem solving, but a huge amount of mistakes were made. And, you know, it just takes a lot of time. I think one of the areas that I've definitely felt is that, you know, things don't really happen overnight. There's always a much longer story than people see, maybe from the outside, in terms of how long it takes to even to get up and running, even just to get that initial funding. And yeah, it certainly, you know, there was times where it was very difficult. And, you know, even now the business is a bit more mature and new problems always present themselves. But yeah, I mean, looking back, there were certainly times where, you know, we were challenged. You're scratching your head going, God, what do we do next here?
Did you raise money for How's My Dog? You mentioned there just about raising the initial rounds. Did you do that for How's My Dog?
Yes. So How's My Dog's raised just under 5 million now. And that's allowed us to, I suppose, really expand. And so obviously now the business operates in around 8 countries. We're quite big in a lot of densely populated cities. Obviously, this business works really well in like a densely populated area. Yeah, because you know, that's obviously where more people live. So places like Paris, Berlin, Dublin, I suppose, Madrid, London's works really well in kind of those sort of cities. And yeah, I mean, in terms of the host side of it, probably have about 35,000 hosts now that mind and walk dogs, and obviously they've all been vetted. So, you know, that really allowed us to kind of grow that. And I think that we did some pretty good strategic M&A, I think, over the last couple of years. And the market then itself got lucky, I suppose. Things went online, pet services went online, and it really allowed us to kind of get out of Ireland in terms of reaching more customers. I remember in the early days speaking to, I think it was Enterprise Ireland. They said that, you know, marketplaces will never work if you're an Irish company. Just there's not enough people. And to an extent, it's true. You know, you were saying there, you need scale in order for a marketplace to work. So we kind of started to realize very quickly, okay, we're going to have to, you know, not only can we be in Ireland, we might also have to go into the UK and then obviously the other countries after that. Were kind of, that's probably something that we hadn't really planned in the early days, but as the business grew, it just started to make sense.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. You probably would need fundraising to start a marketplace. There's just so much that needs to go into it, so many kind of moving parts and things like that. So was there an initial fundraising that you did, maybe friends and family round or anything like that, and how did you go about it?
It is difficult to raise money. I mean, probably more so difficult than maybe if you're going out in the UK or in the US market. And really for us, we had probably gotten to about 20,000 customers. And we'd said, okay, we have a business now. We can understand that there's definitely a road here for growth. And we said, okay, now we need to take on some additional capital. And originally we had started, you know, getting some grants. The Irish government are actually really great at you know, the grants that are there for entrepreneurs. We had taken the Competitive Start Fund off Enterprise Ireland, and we'd gone in through the NDRC, and that had come with some funding and also mentoring and office space. And all these grants, you know, they kind of kept us alive to get to a stage where we could then go, okay, now is a good time to actually take on more capital. We can kind of justify it now. We can see a clear path to growth. You know, went out and spoke to the market. And, you know, as you said, marketplaces are difficult. At the time, it was still a very new concept. And we had found a kind of couple of smaller funds that were interested. But then we had also realized that, you know, we were building this really great community of pet owners who were kind of also like brand advocates. And we came across this idea of crowdfunding. And, you know, it works very nicely with businesses that are kind of community driven. And we really liked the idea of having some of our, I suppose, super users being investors in the business. So we launched a crowdfunding campaign. So we launched on CrowdCube. And yeah, it was just, you know, we were blown away with the response. I think we raised 600,000 or 700,000 in like 2 or 3 days, because consumer businesses do really well. A huge amount of our community that used the business often also invested. People had seen the traction to date, and they liked the idea of, you know, pet services are certainly moving online, and they liked the business. And, you know, we're not trying to sell B2B software or anything. It's, you know, you kind of get the idea quite quickly. It's very consumer facing. So those businesses typically tend to do well on crowdfunding, because people go, oh, you know, they're Airbnb for dogs. You know, I get that. So yeah, we were really pleased with the crowdfunding, and that really kind of allowed us then to properly ramp things up.
You mentioned earlier just that you had done some quite smart just M&A and a few transactions over the period of the life cycle of the business to date. Tell me a little bit about the merger with Good Dog, how that came about, and I suppose what you've got from it and how it's benefited you.
When we met the team at Good Dog, we were operating in Ireland, the UK and Germany, and they were operating in Spain and France. And I'd actually met Javi and Lolly, the two founders of Good Dog, at an event about a year before. And we kind of briefly spoke, and we were both doing the same thing, but we weren't in, you know, crossing markets or whatever. So there was no real keeping your cards close to your chest because we were in totally different territories. And actually, we just got on really well. And I flew over to Madrid, and we went for dinner, and we just kind of chatted, and we just kind of teetered around the idea of, you know, well, what would happen if we kind of maybe consolidated the space and our markets really complemented each other. And naturally, it just kind of grew from that. And when it comes to M&A, so we've acquired about 5 or 6 companies now in Europe, and this was more of a merger. But when it comes to M&A, I think, you know, the relationship aspect of it is so important. You know, it can look perfect on paper. And, you know, for us with Good Dog, House My Dog and Good Dog, it looked perfect on paper. You know, it's like, okay, we get 2 new extra territories and they get 3 new extra territories. And, you know, the founders get on really well. Like Javi and Lolly are close friends now. And, you know, even if it looks good on paper, it fundamentally comes down to, you know, can the teams come together and can the founders get on? And thankfully for us, you know, that worked out so well. But I think, you know, when it came to the M&A, the thing that I was, suppose, most worried about is, you know, you can get a deal over the line, but the most important thing about a merger is kind of, okay, what happens on day one after the merger? Like, how does this now go with the two businesses coming together? I think we just executed on that really well in terms of both teams came together. We really aligned with the vision of where we wanted the business to go. And, you know, from that, we became one of the largest communities of pet owners in Europe. And it really kind of brought us to that next level. And kind of once you're at that next level, I suppose, then the funding conversations become easier. And you get a huge amount of information about the Spanish and the French market. And they get information about the Irish and the UK and the German markets. And yeah, I mean, it really just kind of took us to that next level. And it was a blessing meeting 2 founders who were in the same space that we just got on really well with as just kind of people.
If you hadn't done the merger, if you hadn't gone through with it, do you care to kind of think about where the business would be now? And I suppose in as you say, you'd need scale to make a marketplace profitable or to make it into the business that you probably had goals to make it into. So I suppose less competitors probably helps that, considering it's a bit of a race to the top with these types of businesses. Talk to me a little bit about that. Do you think things would be a lot different now if you hadn't gone through with the merger?
Yeah, I think, you know, it fundamentally changed probably the trajectory of the business. It's hard to know where the business would be today if we hadn't gone through that merger. I probably definitely know that it wouldn't be as big. I mean, in terms of getting that sort of scale, doing that organically or doing that through paid acquisition, that gets very expensive. And I think when you look at marketplaces, that was about 3 years ago. It is a bit of a land grab in terms of, you have the fundamental same business model operating in different territories. And when you're then moving into territories with other well-funded competitors, you're driving the price of everything up. You're driving the price of clicks up. You're driving the price of acquiring sitters up, acquiring customers up. So, you know, for us, it worked out great in the sense that we were able to consolidate a huge chunk of the European space at a time when a really well-funded US competitor was coming into the market who recently just IPO'd. It gave us a really nice moat against that because we had built up sitter base now in a couple of countries in Europe and, you know, sitter base with, you know, thousands of bookings. They've been on the platform 3 or 4 years. It gave us that really nice moat to defend against any kind of competition in the space. And also, you know, gave us that scale that is also required in order for a marketplace business to fundamentally make sense from, I suppose, a revenue standpoint.
I suppose it would make it very difficult for even a very well-financed new entrant into the market because, I mean, just thinking about it, if I was a sitter on the platform and I was actually making a living, why would I move to another platform where there might not be as much uptake initially or whatever else? So it kind of does protect you from people moving platforms.
Yeah. We find as well that, you know, typically what happens when, you know, a large US competitor comes into the European landscape, they can get a good foothold in the UK market, but it gets very difficult. Europe is very unique in the sense that France is very different to Spain, and is very different to Germany, even at a very high level, just, you know, at language, it's different. And there's obviously nuances in each market and each marketing message. And I think being able to have those couple of years under our belt of learning about each individual market, and, you know, that then all of a sudden becomes a competitive advantage, as opposed to someone just coming in and going, right, we're in the UK, now how do we scale into Spain and France and Germany and Finland and these other markets who are quite different. I think if you were to scale just in America, you know, it's obviously super competitive over there, but at a very easy point, at least everyone's on the same page in terms of it's one language, it's one channel, it's one, I suppose, domain and all this sort of thing. So, you know, Europe is a bit tricky in that sense.
We talked about the difficulties, I suppose, of starting a marketplace and gaining a foothold in that type of business model. Another difficult business model to get into if you were starting from a standing start might be the D2C model, because it's very difficult to acquire customers if, say, the traditional model of wholesaling a product into Tesco and someone's walking along and sees it, you might be able to grab their attention that way. But I suppose you've had an advantage in the fact that you would have had a customer base of dog owners and dog enthusiasts already in order to sell the pet food into. Talk to me just a little bit about the start of Oscar's Farm and the pet food business and how you would have used the two customer bases effectively.
Yeah, I mean, the e-commerce space, it's very different to marketplaces. I think, you know, one of the things that we found very quickly with Good Dog was paid wasn't exactly the strategy that we relied on in order to move the needle for, you know, customer acquisition in any given territory. For us, we found that we put a huge amount of time into organic and SEO. We really became proactive in our blog and being able to get those Google search ranks for at a local level. So people searching, you know, let's just, for example, dog sitter in Ranala, you know, becoming the first organic search that came up there, right? Writing content about, you know, interviewing some of the dog sitters in Ranala and making them put keywords into their profile, which ranked them up high on Google. And that really was so important for us because it meant that obviously during COVID, when we had to pay, we would turn all our paid marketing off, you know, 80% of our traffic still came from organic. And that investment over the last few years of trying to be kind of market leaders in that SEO space really, I suppose, it came through for us there, because we were still getting a huge amount of our traffic even without paid acquisition, because we hadn't relied on it so much. Whereas e-commerce is very different in terms of us looking for a dog owner to tell them about this new great dog food that we have. We obviously have to go on to the likes of Facebook and Instagram and really have a kind of paid strategy there. I think, I suppose, the nice thing about a subscription business is that if you get a customer on, you know, and they really like the food and their dog thrives off it, that the hope is that they stick around for a long time. So those kind of unit economics, they stack up in the sense that if you're acquiring a customer for X, they stick around for long enough that you can kind of then have a sustainable business. So quite different in that sense. And I think with Oscar's Farm, one of the kind of key advantages, I suppose, we see is that we obviously have experience from scaling into other territories in the European space. We've got experience in the pet care space. And also then, you know, that cross-channeling. I think a lot of customers, we're seeing it in the pet food space, that they're almost being treated like, I suppose, high-growth tech companies, and they're acquiring millions and millions of euros to scale those businesses. But that's a lot of that's for customer acquisition. Because we already kind of have that customer base, we can focus more so on the product itself and things like this, as opposed to having to have such an aggressive strategy for customer acquisition, because we already have that customer base. And, you know, fine, they signed up to Good Dog looking for services, probably last minute, going, oh, that wedding's actually next week, I need to find a sitter. Good Dog came and helped, they used a sitter or a walker on the platform. But they're also dog owners that we can go, look, you might be looking for a sitter or a walker right now, but, you know, why don't you try this new innovative fresh pressed dog food? We think your dog is going to love it. So being able to cross sell there is certainly a huge part of our strategy going forward. And, you know, the data we're getting back from launching Oscar's Farm in the Irish market, which has been crazy since we launched and exceeded everyone's expectations, But the data that's coming back there is saying that a lot of our customers are coming from that Good Dog platform, which really gives us a nice kind of competitive advantage when you're competing with the likes of Nestle and these huge incumbents that are quite dominant in the pet food space.
What's it like starting and running a business with your brother?
Yeah, I mean, we have years of kicking the hell out of each other that eventually we understand each other quite well. I think, you know, I'm very lucky to have just a business partner, but the fact that it's also my brother, you know, it's a really nice, I suppose, combination. And anyone that asks, oh, what's it like working with family? I can't recommend it enough. I think that there's obviously a huge element of trust there. Obviously, don't get me wrong, there are times when business is just difficult and, you know, stress levels are high and, you know, you have it out with each other. But I suppose that's that's common as just being siblings anyway, growing up as kids over the years. But I think now, you know, we've always been very aligned with where we want the business to go and where we see the kind of next couple of years and, you know, being able to have a partner there, but also someone that's, you know, a family member and a brother that you can kind of blindly trust has been a huge advantage. And, you know, I would certainly say that, you know, had I not had a partner or a co-founder, you know, brother or not, I don't think I would have been able to do any of this by myself. You need the kind of extra help there. It's also just good to be able to shoot the breeze when, you know, things are getting tough. So certainly I can't imagine what the journey would have been like had I done it alone.
It strikes me as you're talking, you seem like a person that has a confidence or at least a sense of that, you know, the next few years, at least you can sort of make turn out in some way the way you want them to turn out. You kind of have a confidence in what you're doing and where you want things to go. Has having a partner in business helped that? Or where do you think that comes from?
Yeah, I think having a partner certainly helps just kind of every element of the business. It's also nice to be sharing the kind of journey with someone. I think that when we first started off, I was always very focused on the end goal. And now maybe as getting a bit older, I'm kind of also just also loving the day-to-day. And even with since launching Oscar's Farm, I love the fact that back in the trenches a bit again, and it's super hands-on and, you know, at the weekends packing boxes and delivering orders to people and actually speaking to the customer again and stuff. Because don't get me wrong, you know, Good Dog has been a success in that sense. But when it becomes a bigger company, it becomes kind of a different company, and that's also very enjoyable. But going back to the really super early stage from launching Oscar's Farm and being more hands-on has been so enjoyable. And I think that in terms of looking at the kind of roadmap ahead for Good Dog and Oscar's Farm, I think obviously Good Dog is closely correlated with travel. So, you know, the last 18 months, there's no denying it was very difficult for the business. It was very difficult for, you know, just a lot of people in general outside the, not even talking about business, but very difficult for Irish businesses. And especially even for us, you know, we certainly felt a hit there in terms of when travel started to almost become, you know, non-existent in Europe. We had to really, I suppose, batten down the hatches and figure out what the next kind of 12, 18 months looks like. And I suppose really weather that storm and feel like now we've kind of really come out the other end of that. And certainly at times it was just difficult because you kind of really had to just go week by week. There was no knowing as to know how long this virus was going to last, if a vaccine would ever come out. You know, that played a huge role as to what the future of the company was going to look like. I think coming out the other end of that, it's just kind of, there's been some kind of, I suppose, secular tailwinds that have helped. We had no idea that everyone was going to get a dog during lockdown, it seems like, which for us, you know, our market grew a huge amount. At that same time, no one was traveling, but pet ownership, and, you know, had this unprecedented level of growth. And now, you know, as vaccines start to roll out, you know, we're seeing travel really opening up again. And we've also seen, you know, an accelerated shift to online services. You know, people now, they were buying their groceries online. They were more so buying their food online. And the same thing happened in pet services. People are more comfortable now with the platform. While it was a very difficult time for the business, there's no denying it, we've certainly taken some positives, if there was any to take, from what's happened over the last kind of 12, 18 months. And, you know, we're still licking our wounds a bit, but certainly see a really nice trajectory now of hopefully coming out the other end of this and being able to facilitate all those new pet owners and being able to offer them cool services and great pet food.
You talked a little bit there about obviously having a partner in business and the help that's brought about. I wanted just to ask you about, because yourself and your brother were nominees for the EY Entrepreneur of the Year competition. And I know with that comes a good network of fellow entrepreneurs and business people. Has that helped? Talk to me a little bit about that experience.
The EY program, certainly when we got interviewed for it and, you know, there were interviewing lots of candidates, I kind of said to my brother, oh, that was great, but, you know, chances are not a hope. So when they called us and said, oh, you've been selected as finalists, I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing, you know, like very humbled. And then they'd said, oh, and you're obviously invited to come on the EY trip. And we hadn't really known anything about that. And they were like, it's in Hong Kong. So, you know, just the whole thing was a bit crazy. And just, it was like very exciting at the time. And then the whole experience of that, of just being able to meet these really great entrepreneurs that that are the alumni of that network, and everyone just, you know, very generous with their time and genuinely interested in what you're doing and always there able to offer you feedback if you need it. And having that network to lean on has actually been, you know, something that, you know, has been really, really great to be involved in. And it certainly helped a huge amount. And even just some of the entrepreneurs we met over that process, just really interesting to see what people are doing and learning from them and getting that feedback. So, you know, I hadn't really known what to expect it before going in. I'd always watched it on the TV every year. But from going through the whole process, you know, I can't recommend it enough in terms of the people you get to meet and the network you get to become a part of, you know, for life. And also just the experience itself, you know, being flown out to Hong Kong and traveling around China was just something that I'll never forget.
Well, James, I've massively enjoyed this conversation. I think it's a very interesting story of an Indigenous Irish business that has gone global in a short space of time. And there's obviously a lot more to go. So we wish you the very best of luck. And thank you very much for joining me for the conversation.
Thank you so much. It was great to chat. Keep the podcast going. I enjoy every episode. And thanks very much for having me.
This podcast is produced by JetBooks, an online bookkeeping service dedicated to giving you real-time financial information at the click of a button. Our team of qualified accountants leverage the power of cloud technology to automate your manual processes and cut the cost of your finance function in half. Head to jetbooks.ie/resources to pick up our free step-by-step guide on how to automate your bookkeeping. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a 5-star review. It really helps others to find the show. I'm your host, Connor Carney. Thanks for listening.